The following program is recorded live and intended for all audiences.
Trubisky being rushed, throws to the end zone for Deion Sims. He's got it for a touchdown.
Bears Hour Live. Bears Hour Live. One straight hour of Bears talk with Bears Girl and that draft Dr. Phil guy. Monday through Friday, the barroom's got you covered. The HL place the tags, cause Fuller's got you smothered. Draft Dr. Phil, it's always hit sticks. Splitting double teams like 96 Akeem Hicks.
Our line
keeps growing, Mitchell keeps throwing. Dimes on time, and in the window weeds growing. Don't deny it that this show is a collaboration with a fan. Bears Girl moderated, Dr. Phil is the man. Bears Hour Live.
And our special personal thanks from the Chicago Bears family to Brian for all his many, many years of excellence on the field.
Tell you what, it feels good to be back here. I haven't been back to Soldier Field since my last game. It just feels great. I've never experienced it like this before with all you fans. I've never seen a halftime before. If this is what it looks like, I want to be out here all the time. But you guys always knew when to cheer, you knew when to be quiet, and you guys gave us a little bump, a little urge every time we needed it. I can't say thank you enough. This is a big day for me and my family. I'm glad to be back here, and thank you guys so much for coming out. Appreciate it.
Hello, Bears fans. You just heard a little of Virginia McCaskey and Brian Urlacher's comments from the Monday night halftime festivities honoring our new Hall of Famer. And of course, ESPN didn't carry that celebration, so thanks to ChicagoBears.com for that audio. You better believe the doc will address that ESPN disgrace very, very soon. You're listening, of course, to Bears Hour Live with Draft Dr. Phil. My name is Bears Girl, calling in from Toronto, Canada, and I'm here to monitor comments from our Twitter accounts and those in our MixLR live chat room. You may notice I'm a bit under the weather tonight, thanks to the amount of screaming I was doing at my television set on Monday night. Phil has a very special guest who will join us in a little bit to talk about the Bears' 24-17 win against the Seahawks. But first, as always, we begin with his opening rant.
Thanks, BG. Yeah, tonight, the storms, as you can hear, are brewing. And my first thoughts on my mind draw me to ESPN and how terribly they dropped the ball last night. In today's fantasy football world that we live in, drenched in a fan base craving for positivity and stats, we oftentimes forget the past and the great players from it. Last night's broadcast by ESPN kicked off with Matt Hasselbeck lying to a national audience saying, quote, "Yes, the Bears are at home, but I look out here and I see a sea of Seahawks green in the seats. The Bears don't have a home field advantage right now," end quote. This is a straight up lie, manipulating truth at its finest. I had several barflies reach out to me, sending pictures of the stadium packed full of Bears fans gloriously rocking their gear, sending me videos of the stadium rocking and the crowd booing Brandon Marshall's first catch. Never mind my amazing surround sound studio in my man cave showing and capturing an electric crowd, understanding each and every moment, big and the small. Even my wife turned to me and said, "Wow, it's loud there." Hasselbeck, narrative debunked. But ESPN wasn't done yet. They continued their absurdity, overlooking a moment, as I said, where past players are celebrated on a night in a city where pro football was born. Their Hall of Fame linebacker was being celebrated. He was being rewarded with a ring in front of the fans that helped build ESPN and the fans that adored this man. Now, never mind me, who has sat through Brett Favre's night, Bart Starr night, Christ, even Barry Sanders night, we saw a glimpse and witnessed a moment where their fan base, not being able to be at the great city, were able to peek in and see and celebrate someone they grew up loving and cheering. When they announced a commercial-free halftime, I thought it was, as friend of the show, Adam Rank, tweeted at me, a layup that they were covering and giving you a glimpse of 54, and they were going to do it commercial-free, and I applauded that. I'm sure the sea of green in the stadium, oh wait. Instead, we got bubblegum MTV music video that would be best witnessed with one of those skip buttons on a YouTube clip. Putrid, horrible, and completely pathetic. Thanks to Barfly and friend of the show, Greg Braggs, for capturing the moment for Bears fans in the stadium. Because I'll tell you right now, if you weren't there, you weren't able to witness that historic moment. And lastly, and quickly, real quick, on Coach Nagy. Coaching is about seeing the issues in self and opponent and addressing them by being proactive and not reactive. In football, much like life, no matter how many times you try to fit the Volkswagen key in the Mercedes-Benz, it's never gonna start. Nagy is playing with a defense that is giving him house money in games. This kind of advantage you don't find in Vegas. This is the kind of defense that don't come around very often in a league full of offensive rule changes to capture and catapult teams into parity. Last time I checked, casinos like to take your money and not give it away. As I watch this young coach, who, mind you, has coached football his entire life, been a part of it, was a quarterback, force feed his QB to pass, skipping over situational football rules and creating more questions than answers. Friend of the show, the smartest man, tweeted, "The only defender that has been able to stop Jordan Howard has been head coach Matt Nagy." The biggest and best security blanket for a young QB is often said to be a big tight end. However, I always say it's a great running back because of how he dictates where a defense has to step and flow. Eventually, allows a young QB open passing lanes, easy targets, and even easier reads. It helps the offensive line maintain blocks. Nagy's trickery and unwillingness to run the football in games has cost him points and a big win on the road versus your biggest rival. I watch his creativity and I'm all for it. But situationally, to forget Howard is a football mortal sin. June Jones run and shoot type of offense. Let me look back at this game. To go no huddle, quick game, under 2 minutes with the ball. Going into the half, up 7-0, and you're on the goal line there. You have control of the game and the score. You could drain the clock out and kick a field goal and go into the half, but your hurry cost you 3 points. It's little things like that. To go out after the game and admit that you as a head coach are fine with Mitch throwing 4 interceptions. Ultimate trust. The next play mentality. I get it. That could work. but not at the cost of the team as a whole. The strategic balance of developing a young QB and a team at the same time has a strange dynamic of trying to do too much, be too cute, worrying about Mitch, and not enough worry about winning football games. Playing through struggles is one thing, but playing to your weakness while avoiding your strength hurts your chances in winning with house money. And that is a problem. And that is my rant.
Doc, I am with you on so much of that rant, especially the epic fail by ESPN to not broadcast the Urlacher tribute. As I sat here in my 54 jersey, I figured it was a blame Canada quite moment for the feed getting cut to a Von Miller interview and a shitty band. But hearing it was not even broadcast in Chicago is absolutely shameful. But let's bring in your special guest tonight who's going to share his thoughts on your rant and, of course, the Bears' first win that some fans are loving and others are not quite satisfied with. Joining us now is friend of the show, Emery Hunt, also known as Czar of the Playbook. He is a former running back at the University of Louisiana and is now a broadcast football analyst and the owner-founder of Football Game Plan. Emery, are you there? Welcome to Bears Hour Live.
I am here, and I definitely appreciate you guys having me on tonight.
Emery, how you feeling? I mean, are you feeling my emotion in the rant?
Yeah, I was feeling it, man. I actually loved you guys' production, the music, the way you guys have it flowing. I was with you with everything up until you started talking about Jordan Howard the Great. But, you know, I got...
We're going to have a special show for me and you on that, but that'll have to be on 100 proof. But let's get into this game because, you know, back-to-back primetime games, new coach, new quarterback. You got to see, obviously, both as well as the nation. Did you see, first off, improvement from week one versus Green Bay to week two in the quarterback as well as the team?
I saw improvement from week one to week two in the offensive game plan. It seems as though he had Matt Nagy had a better game plan this week. You know, I know a lot of talk was about week one where he got off script and everything went haywire, but he seemed to adjust real well to what Seattle was trying to do. They had a lot of open opportunities in the passing game. The running game was there. Like you talked about in your open, if he would have stuck with it, it could have worked and allowed Trubisky to operate off play action to have an easier time. But I thought defensively, the Bears are going in the right direction. This was something I talked about in my preseason preview, that the Bears defense was already good last year. It got even better with Roquan Smith and bringing back the two corners. Not even talking about, at the time, you know, Khalil
the
Mack.
Elephant in the room.
Exactly, because that was the one piece where the Bears probably had a question mark. Okay, who's going to rush opposite of Leonard Floyd? Who's going to be that guy? And lo and behold, they got that guy. I thought it was going to be Aaron Lynch, who is doing well in his role. So now you just have a lot of different guys on that defense. I'm a big fan of what they have going on defensively. Offensively, the pieces are there. It's just about finding the right fit, getting, you know, I always say, like, think players and not plays. And a lot of times these new coaches tend to get enamored with, you know, the design of the play and the play. Just put the ball in the hand of your best players and let them do work, and you'll look smarter as a coach as a result.
Yeah, and that takes me to where we are, because you're bringing up a question that I have, so I just want to transfer to it and skip offensive football for a second. But the Bears invested a high pick trading up for Leonard Floyd, and in watching him personally, for me, I've been, let's just put it kindly here, less than enamored with what I'm seeing on tape, effort-wise, technique-wise, strength-wise. A lot of people are giving him the excuse because of the club. And then I look at number 99, Aaron Lynch, and his effort out there, and it's like night and day. It's like watching Khalil Mack versus, you know, a practice squad player. It was that evident that these two players are on different levels. Did you see it the same? And what do you think about Leonard Floyd as well as the club excuse?
Well, here's the thing. I've always said this, you know, defense is about, and more in particular, stopping the run, but defense as a whole is about attitude and want to. You got to literally want to tackle somebody. You got to want to hit somebody. Not everybody can play defense. And, you know, these are some of the questions I had about Leonard Floyd back at Georgia. I wasn't overly high on Leonard Floyd. I wasn't overly high on a guy like Alec Ogletree. I was definitely high on Odell Willis. I was definitely high on Greg Blue. I was definitely high on Thomas Davis, the safety. Definitely high on Kendrell Bell, you know, because those backers at Georgia exemplified that want to, that you want from your backers. You know, if you don't have that, and Aaron Lynch has that, you could tell he has that it about him. And for Floyd, to me, Floyd looks like a guy that's, you know, he's a good player, but he's thinking out there. And if, because, you know, a lot of times defense is just reactionary. It's literally see ball, hit ball. And, you know, if you're thinking out there, you're hesitant, you're going to get yourself blocked, you're going to get washed out of plays. So I think he just has to just stop thinking, go out there and just play ball. And it's tough to, you know, we used to say growing up, I can't make you tough. I can't make you want to fight somebody. You got to have that in you. Either you have it in you or you don't, no matter what position you play or what it is you're doing. And some guys, you know, are great athletes, but may not be the may not have the it as far as football player is concerned. But I do believe Leonard Floyd, you know, he's a good player. He makes plays. You know, we've seen that before. I think he just has to stop thinking and get out there and just play ball and let the chips fall where they may. If you mess up, mess up 100%.
How much do you think the club is affecting him as a football player right now?
We just saw a guy with one hand on the opposite side, you know, make play after play. So, you know, I've seen a cornerback play effectively with a club. So, you know, those that haven't been in it tend to find that as an excuse. But
exactly,
if you got that dog in you, you're going to have that dog in you regardless.
Well, that's why I asked you, because I know you have it in you, and this show is a standard of truth. Now, we might not agree on Jordan Howard. That'll be a conversation maybe later. But in Leonard Floyd, there's a play, critical play, third down play in the final drive. Actually, it was a closer game. I think it was, the score was a seven-point game. It's third and four. He comes clean on a twist stunt. And the running back's right in the hole. He just doesn't do what you said. He doesn't want to tackle this guy full aggression. And he puts, you know, pads on him and then other gang tackle. The guy's a yard short of the first down. The ref spots the ball a full yard from where he was tackled. There were so many ball spots in this game that were so questionable. If I put them all up, it becomes I'm a conspiracist. But in reality, the tape never lies. That didn't. The guy that was physical from Georgia was Roquan Smith. And give me what you thought about him and his performance in his first game, and give him a grade on what you thought.
What I like about Roquan Smith is that, you know, he plays how he tests. So he's a guy that tests fast and tests well, and he plays that way. Often you see guys that are fast that play slow and vice versa. But he's a backer that you know, he's, you know, he has the want to, the tackle. And he's going to not only beat you to the spot if you're trying to get outside on the perimeter, but he's going to arrive in a bad mood. He's going to really lay a good pop on you. And when he hits you, you don't really break his tackles. So He's a good form tackler. He brings good pop upon contact. He trusts what he sees, so he's going to fly to where he believes the play is going to be. And 9 times out of 10, he was right. I give him a B+.
Nice.
You know, for what he did last night, you know, getting his first start. So I think they have something special with Trevathan and Smith on the inside with Mack and Floyd with Lynch rotating in there. The Bears' defensive front seven is going to be a problem for the entire season.
Yeah, this is something I said watching the tape today. It's epic to, you know, to your point in your preseason remarks about the Bears' defense. I was right there with you. And when we did our immediate reactionary show on Bears Barroom Radio Network to the Khalil Mack trade that Saturday morning, Shane, Aldo, and myself were not only euphoric in the, you know, the collection of this kind of talent, but we were also seeing the sun setting on a franchise that its very foundation was built defensively. That how much this player would have an impact on this football team, we, you know, drew it all out to where it was, almost to the exact scientific formula and equation that we're seeing it now. And my expectations for him were great. He's gone beyond that in regards to Khalil Mack. And when you throw in these other flavors, if you will, because to your point, Roquan Smith, to me, I don't know what kind of, you know, weed they got in Wisconsin for Lauren Cox saying he wasn't impressed with Roquan, because on a Monday night football game, I was blown away by not only his confidence, but his immediate impact. And as you said, to steal from you, he arrived in a bad mood. Adrian Amos brings the wood. He lays the foundation on people, and you can hear his impact in collision. Roquan Smith had a hit in that game against, I'm trying to think of which running back it was. It might have been Penny, to stop him short of a first down. The whole crowd on the surround sound, you could hear it go, whoa. And that presence as a rookie, talk about how hard and difficult that is for maybe the common football fan to understand, that this kid's not only playing to what he tested at and what his college tape says, but now he's starting his first game, and to have that kind of B+ impact that you have, I was right there with you. I gave him an A- because he missed the first tackle of the game coming in clean. He went and he just missed the tackle. So I kind of downgraded him there. And then the second tackle, he comes in physical and kind of got turned. And then from there on out, I thought this kid's performance as a rookie out there, it was needed against Green Bay. He could have been the difference in my mind because they just picked on Kwiatkowski. But talk about Roquan's transition and what that meant the other night.
Well, I'm not surprised because he's coming out of a 3-4 defense at Georgia. So he has experience playing, you know, not protected by a lineman in front of him. So he's going to have to get off blocks and have to be physical at the point of attack. So not surprised that he showed that last night. To me, that was the easiest transition. It's hard to play in a defense where you have to get used to, you know, whether you're going from a 3-4 to a 4-3 and playing on the inside, used to having freedom because you have bodies in front of you. But him going from what he ran at Georgia to what they're running right now in Chicago, it was just seamless.
Yeah, it really was. And you know what? We're going to get into this guy next, but I know I'm jumping into Khalil Mack, but I want to stay inside backer. I thought Danny Trevathan just looked like rejuvenated and reborn, because watching him fly around the football field, it was almost like he felt like he didn't have to worry about his sidekick. And now it allowed him to be free. And that, to me,
showed up on tape, because Danny, whether it be him being competitive and just fiery and wanting to make plays too, and the energy of that night, I mean, this, the spiritual energy of that defense was, it's flaming off the tape. But Trevathan specifically was just rejuvenated. Talk about him.
It's funny. I find myself saying this. I could talk to my homeboys about this because they get my vernacular and get where I'm going with it. But watching Chicago play defense, and there's only a few teams that usually that had this. I would say that that Eagles defense from the 90 Eagles defense, the Baltimore Ravens of 2000s defense, this Bears defense, the Seahawks defense in their heyday, they look like they're from that city. Like, I was watching, it was one play where Trevathan popped somebody. I'm like, man, and he went to the sideline, took his helmet. I was like, man, he looked like he from Chicago. Like, Roquan Smith, Khalil Mack, they look like they're from Chicago. Like, they look like they found these guys around the block and was like, hey, we got a game tonight. You know, and they show up and they, and you know, I was like, man, so that juxtaposed to how aggressive, how instinctive, how smart, how you know, fast Trevathan played last night next to Roquan Smith was just impressive. And to be honest, 44 did a good job too. He popped some people too.
So yeah, he was playing.
It's contagious, man. When when one dude, you know, lays out an offensive player, the next guy wants to do the same thing. It's no different than on offense. You know, speaking from a running back's perspective, you probably know this well, Phil, where you know, you have a big run and you come to the side because you're catching your breath. The next guy goes in. He has a big run because he wants the same accolades, and now y'all competing with one another. But in the same, at the same time, y'all making the team better because y'all both balling. You saw that last night on defense from that linebacking core.
Yeah, definitely. And you stole my thunder there, because Kwiatkowski, I felt the competition. And if you have pride in your craft and in your performance, you're speaking a poem that I preach in my coaching career, in my locker room with players. You know, you want to play? Show me. And having that kind of competition, it just breeds success. And you're 100% right. And a guy that, to me, has changed the whole context of this football team, clearly, is, I don't know if I've seen a pass rusher, Emery, like this. And I said it last week, I'll say it again, since Lawrence Taylor, just the ability to bend or use power or just explode and set the edge and swim and rip and throw people to the ground. His motor, he's falling down, Emery, getting held. And he's losing balance because he's getting tackled. And he's clawing to get to the quarterback. The guy is poetry 1 minute, brute force the next. Talk about Khalil Mack and the impact he's had on this team.
Yeah, he came into this situation with an attitude, you know, almost like a prover. But he was playing that way in Oakland. And when you look at, and this is why, you know, sometimes I gotta catch myself of not going back and forth or saying things on Twitter, because it may come out wrong and people may get offended or people may not understand. But when you look at the it factor for Mac, or the hunger, the want to, all the stuff we talked about earlier, and you look at a guy that everyone else talks about as being that guy, let's say like a Myles Garrett. You don't see, you know, I didn't know if Myles Garrett played last Sunday or not, right? you know, you look at Khalil Mack and you instantly know he's on the field. Mm-hmm. You look at a J.J. Watt, you instantly know he's on the field. So, but for Mack, you're like, man, that's the type of defensive lineman you want, a pass rusher. A pass rusher has to be irritating, aggravating to the offense. Like, man, won't this dude slow down? You know, why he keep coming like this? Like, why he not tired yet? You know what I'm saying? So that's what you see in Mack, and that's the type of guy that frustrates other players and frustrates offensive players. So I saw Jalen Rose tweet this out earlier, and I totally agree with him. I even retweeted it and quote tweeted it. But he said Khalil Mack to him reminds him of the modern day Derek Thomas, which is so true, because Thomas was just like that, where it's just like annoying all day long. It's like, man, won't this dude just stop pass rushing? Like, even if you run the ball, it looks like a pass rush. I think that's what they're getting with Mack. I'm glad he's in a situation where they just let him just tee off. He came in with an attitude. They paid him, and he's still playing with that same edge. And, you know, I think people get enamored with the measurables and the athletic testing, and we all know that that doesn't make a football player a football player. And a lot of times you can't really describe it, you know. And so it's, oh, why you like this guy better? Like, well, he just has it. Well, I need to know the formula or the numeric testing that you came about. Like, no, I don't have to show you my work. I'm just telling you, I know a baller when I see one, and that's my scientific, you know, answer right there. He got the it factor. He got the dog in him. You know, there's no test for dog in him. You know, you can test and run fast and who got length and stuff like that. Go get Myles Garrett. I'm gonna get Khalil Mack, and I'm gonna beat your offensive tackle 15 times out of 10. So if you have a team full of guys that have that one, I'm not picking on Myles Garrett. You know, yes, he has athletic traits and he does some things well, but when you talk about having that dog, especially on defense, you have something special, and Khalil Mack has that.
Yeah, he's changed the whole context. And if you think about some of the mistakes, and this Chicago Bears team could easily be 2-0, go backward. I hate to go backwards and what have you, but the reality is, you know, there's hiccups here. And on a show full of truth, you know, I want to flip over to the other side and get it out of the way. I didn't want to start with talking about Mitchell Trubisky, because I know you have a passionate eye, a very stellar eye when it comes to talent that I trust. You know, we have Mark Schofield come on as well, another guy. I try to bring on guests that I know are going to not only tell you the truth as a Bears fan, but also to give you an inside look at what football and what it means to play it beyond, because you hear me talk about it all the time. So I just think the world of Emery. And now, Emery, you look at what Matt Nagy does offensively. And, you know, how difficult is it in your mind for Mitchell to get into a rhythm? And why does it look like, you know, those first 15 plays, they go right down the field to start the game for the second week in a row. They score a touchdown, and then there seems to be some struggles. Talk about the offense and Mitch and what you think.
You know, I just don't think, just flat out, honestly, I don't think Trubisky sees the field well. And that's basically it. You know, if you are a quarterback, then you're basically saying you are the best passer of the football on the team. You know, and I hate when people say, oh, so-and-so can't throw. Well, no. I mean, put Kevin White back there and ask him to throw a bang eight. He won't be. That's can't throw. Put a lineman back there and ask him to throw a slant. He can't do it. That's can't throw. So your quarterback is a guy that can make all the throws. With that being the backdrop, Trubisky just doesn't see the field well. Mm-hmm. And that's what causes him to hesitate, second guess, hold the ball, take unnecessary sacks, be late on throws. You saw it at the goal line there going into halftime. He almost threw a pick. You saw on the pass that Howard made a great reception on where
he's all late.
Yeah, he was late.
A weak side blitz.
And Kendrick could have picked it off on the side, but Howard made the catch. So and that pass was late and behind him. So that's seeing it late. He doesn't anticipate. And to me, he's the way he's playing, it makes you wonder, you know, how does this guy go second overall? Because we are all old enough to remember what it meant to go top five. We are from the era where, you know, Deion Sanders, Barry Sanders, Eric Dickerson, Derek Thomas, you know, Troy Aikman, those guys went to top. If you went to top five, you were supposed to be day one great. You know, you're one of the top five players in the world. Put it that way. So when you say Trubisky is the second overall pick in a draft that had Deshaun Watson, that had Pat Mahomes, that had a toolsy Deshaun Kizer, you expect Trubisky to hit the ground running. There shouldn't have even been a question. So when you're seeing him out there late, miss things, it's kind of concerning, you know, because he has other things that he can do well. He is a good athlete. He's not afraid of pressure. We saw that in college when they beat Florida State. You know, he led them down the field and got the game-winning points. You know, so we know he's not afraid of the blitz. We know he's not afraid to take a hit. We know he can run, but he just has to start to see the field better. And, you know, I know it's easy to judge him by what others are doing. And, you know, other quarterbacks get that same treatment, so to speak. You know, for instance, Tyrod Taylor can't throw two incompletions in a row before people start calling for Baker Mayfield. So right. Trubisky getting compared to Watson is, you know, whether it's fair or unfair, it's going to happen. But he just has to play better. And on paper, when you look at the Bears' offensive line, phenomenal in run blocking. You know, you look at the receiving core, they have individual weapons. You look at the tight end position, they got guys that can make it happen. Backfield is deep. Defense is what it is. So there's enough for this Bears offense to at least score 24 to 28 points a game.
Right.
Trubisky just has to play better on his end. And again, 13 starts in college, what, 7 starts and something like that last year, 9 starts last year. 2 this year.
12 starts last year.
12 starts last year. So, you know, maybe he should have played in the preseason.
You're stealing all my questions.
You know, so I'm looking at this guy. He has to just play better, man. And, you know, at some point, people are going to start looking at him on his own team and look at him like, man, dude, like, you was a second overall. You did it in college. Like, you see dudes get it. You're like, dude, you was a 5-star? Like, damn. Like, trash. You know, so, people are going to start looking at him and say, like, man, like, you're the second overall pick. You got to pick this up.
Now, how – go back to the preseason since you brought it up, and I was going to ask you anyway. How big of a mistake was that in your mind assessing him, not only the limited starts, but the new offensive philosophy, and compare it to Patrick Mahomes, because there is a crowd of people that are going to – fight you, and I don't know where I stand yet, to be perfectly honest. I'm kind of a foot in this camp and a foot out of this camp, but Patrick Mahomes, in the same coach scheme, as well as having the offensive coordinator, who's now the head coach, who's the offensive coordinator calling plays with the Bears, he had a year under Alex Smith and learning and taking his time, while Mitchell Trubisky might have been held back by the dumbest offensive coordinator I've ever seen, and that's being kind, and a head coach. So in fairness, on two levels, so I first organized this question. Is it fair to judge Mahomes versus Trubisky based on the sitting out and learning and now performing to what Matt Nagy did here and sat him out in preseason, totally baffled me, Emery, in putting in this new philosophy, this new offense, and making reps so important, then contradicting yourself twice about, no, we don't need him, but then after the Packers game, we need more reps. So I know it's a large question, but it is a huge topic here. with the Chicago Bears now.
I think it is fair to judge him next to Pat Mahomes, because at the end of the day, system mm-hmm. be damned, verbiage be damned, all that stuff that people love to talk about, you have to go out there and make plays. And this is something that ties directly to their traits. Think mm-hmm. about the play that they even talked about it last night on the broadcast. Think about the play that went viral, right? The steal of the, yeah. the wide open.
Go guys. Over to bearsbarroom.com. Check out my breakdown of it.
Yeah, you did a great job of that, by the way, because think about it. That's the difference between Mahomes and mm-hmm. Trubisky. Now, Mahomes would trust his arm to fit that ball in there. Interception be damned.
Yep.
You saw Trubisky hesitate and think. Again, thinking about the progression, thinking about, can I get it there? When you have to ask yourself that question, it's too late. You got to go somewhere else now. So that's the difference about Mahomes. Mahomes is playing the exact same way he played at Texas Tech, while Trubisky is playing just like he played at North Carolina. You saw this play out in that Sun Bowl game against Solomon Thomas in Stanford. You saw this play out in the Duke game. You saw this play out in the game against Virginia Tech. So yep. when he got outplayed by a guy that should be in the league, that's not in the league, in Gerard Evans. So it goes to the playing to win and not playing, and playing not to lose. You never are going to win a fight if you're afraid to get hit. So you're never going to throw touchdowns if you're afraid to throw picks. So he has to I don't know if that's something that you can just change, but you have to be more cognizant of taking chances. Trust that you got a great defense, so it's even better for you than it would be for Kansas City, because the Bears' defense is light years better than the Chiefs' defense. So mm-hmm. if you make a mistake, we saw this last night.
Yeah.
Trubisky tried to give the game away 3 to 4 times, but the Bears' defense was stifling. It shut down Seattle, gave him another chance, gave him a lot of chances to where he was able to put points up on the board to where he made it a 2-score game. And so if you have that backing of a defense that can get stops and get the ball back for you, you have the luxury of making some mistakes. So don't be afraid to take a chance and throw to a cover guy, And I think that's where the comparison comes from, where you see Mahomes play free, and it has nothing to do with the scheme. Yes, that helps because he knows the playbook already. But I mean, this is the NFL. It's not like college. You don't have classes to go to. You don't have nothing else to do but play football. And so you're there all season long anyway. You got the scheme. Yeah, it doesn't take long to pick up the playbook. If that's all you are supposed to be doing, that's your job. So I don't see what the big deal is. He just has to play better, man, because there's a lot of talent on this Bears team.
He's keeping it 100. I'm like getting fired up thinking about it. I got to say this for the record on the broadcast. Apparently Matt Nagy said that was his 4th read on that viral play. And to me, you've just done a disservice to your quarterback, because anybody that speaks football knows that's the second read on that play. It's like you're protecting this kid, and he knows you're protecting him. So is that a sign of trouble ahead? And let me ask you this. Why the continued amount of throwing? Do you think philosophically Matt Nagy is like, we got to get this kid out of whatever funk he's in and give him as many reps to get him into our philosophy? And because this guy's like, situational football is like thrown out the window. And he's like, you're up, I think it was 17-3. I think it was Cohen or somebody took the ball out of the end zone and it was short. So they're playing inside their 20. I think it was like at the 12. They come out an empty set throwing the football up 17-3 with in the third quarter. I'm like, what is like, it doesn't make any sense to me. It was getting me so much anxiety because, like you said, it's like you're trying to give this game away. Clearly, the kid is having trouble processing, is skittish. I saw an improvement in him, and I'll talk about that. But philosophy and coaching. Do you understand this? Like, is that what you think he's doing? Like, okay, your son got into two accidents. Let's go back out on the road and go together and really go fast and try to get this learned. Because to me, I'm not feeling it. What about you?
Man, this is I like to draw the comparison to the Giants game on Sunday night. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have a quarterback that's immobile, offensive line that's having issues picking up stunts, twists, just regular pressures and things of that nature, why do you have 22 pass attempts to 7 rush attempts? It's easier for a lineman to go forward and run block as opposed to drop back and pass protect. And I tweeted this out. I was like, I don't know why they're throwing the football if obviously Eli can't get out the way. Obviously, they're having issues in pass protection. You spent the second overall pick on a generational talent at running back. Why are you not running the football? So after I tweeted that out, next thing you know, the Giants ran the ball consecutive plays. 5 yards by Barkley, 6 yards by Barkley. Third play, they go play action. Lo and behold, Eli Manning had time. He damn near throws an intercept. So that shows you your problem right there. It's Eli Manning. And I feel as though I don't understand why someone on the sideline, I know, you know, you want to protect your job, protect that check. I get it. But where are your friends? Where's the assistant coach to put you to the side like, coach, yo, what the hell are you doing? You know what I'm saying? Like, Nagy, like, obviously we're up. Obviously we're backed up. Obviously this dude just threw like 2 picks and damn near threw 4 more. It's almost like the Harlem Knights when Arsenio Hall slapped the homeboy with the hat, like with the small gun. Like, don't shoot that little mother, you know what, no more. Like, so why would someone not tell Nagy, like, dude, like, stop trying to prove everybody to prove to everybody that you're a genius. Just win the game. Lean on your players that can run the ball. Stop trying to make Trubisky the hero. Let him organically become that guy. Until he's able to do that, don't try to force the issue because you're going to allow the Seattle Seahawks to be back in this game, which happened.
And to my point, situational football, I mean, the run game is clicking. It's not like you can't be creative. I tweeted it out. You want to be creative? That's great. Use Cohen and Howard in the same backfield to be creative. I could do a lot of different things with those two animals back there. To me, it's to what you're saying. So, you know, me and Emery haven't talked before this show purposefully because just to him, I want it to be organic for you, the Bears fan and the Bars Flies that are listening to this, whether live in the chat room and listening all over the world or on the podcast, because I want to make sure that I'm not ever going to be a meatball, ever. I'm going to criticize what I see on the tape and on the football field. Does that mean I'm always going to be right? No. But I know in my heart I'm right, and I'm going to share it with you, just like I was right about Trubisky not pulling the trigger on that touchdown and the coach screwing up against Green Bay. There's no debate in football. In the football world, there's none. The secrets and whispers and all this other garbage. To Emery's point, somebody needs to grab Coach Nagy. You don't have to save Ryan Pace's job. You got to help this kid learn. And to do that, you need to be able to run the football and get into some old school for those youngins, those millennials, old school power football to get to those points. Emery, guess what? On the touchdown, that drive that he puts, you know, right to Miller, throws it in the corner off that boot on the zone, that was set up by the running game. Jordan Howard, 11-yard carry right before that, down to the 10. Then they come out, they boot off him. The linebackers flew out of there to get to Howard. Flew. in that corner, and Miller just runs a tremendous route to get separation. And Mitch has it, an easy read and throw that you got to make, and he makes it. And there's confidence built. That whole drive, it was run mixed in with pass. There wasn't, like, the throw to Gabriel in the first quarter. How do you miss that throw on the freaking flag route? It's like, I'm going to put that up. You can't miss that in the NFL. He's so wide open. You can't. I don't know what or why you do, if you've done this your whole life, but you can't miss that. He did, because to Emery's point, he's thinking. And the head coach has to turn this around, because I'm not, Emery, back me up here. I'm not overhyping this team. This defense and this running game is good enough to get you into the dance. And once you're there, as you know, and history tells you, anything could happen. So there's no doubt in my mind, if play calling and helping and understanding Trubisky and what he can and cannot do better, not be the smartest, be the most creative, let's run shovel path. I knew that was a trick play coming, right? I was like, here we go. Let's get back to the basics and get this kid right. Because in your mind, do you think, not only am I talking what you're preaching, but do you think Mitchell Trubisky can turn it around with this coach and this offensive philosophy?
Average to bad quarterbacks get coaches fired. You know, we've seen that before. We saw it in Jacksonville with Gabbert. We saw it with Jake Locker. Not saying Trubisky is on that end of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I will say this, though. Full disclosure. Coaches tend to live vicariously through players that play the same position. We see it with the Saints with Sean Payton and wanting to throw the ball 60 times a game. We see it with defensive-minded head coaches investing all their draft capital on defensive players. With Rex Ryan and Ty Bowles and those guys like that. Mm-hmm. If I was a head coach, best believe we're going to run the football 45 times and probably 20, you know. And so I totally get why Nagy is trying to make the quarterback the hero. I completely understand it. Because, again, if I was coaching, the running backs would be the featured players on that team. But you have to have some – you got to be able to take yourself out the situation – and really coach without emotion. You got to coach without emotion, play call without emotion, and really just call it for what it is. Like, hey, until my quarterback picks up his play, until I can trust him, you know what? We got to keep the, like they've used before, we got to keep the training wheels on him. Until that happens, you know, we can't go toe-to-toe with Russell Wilson. We can't make this a Russell Wilson, Mitch Trubisky game. We can't do that, because that's right. A battle. And so until he becomes that guy that you can go toe-to-toe with, then you got to find other ways to have success. And the funny part is the Bears have multiple ways to have success.
Before we get to all these questions from the Barflies, and I could see your frustration, but this is a football show. I love
these
this game.
Guys in the chat room want in on this discussion.
They're
my frustration
come in.
Is their frustration. So let me
they're
know when you're ready
in.
For them.
This is the last question before we get into it. But I want to know, step back, Emery. You've seen two games, almost a quarter of a season, new system. One word answer right now. The biggest weakness in your mind with this Bears team right now?
Quarterback.
Thank you. BG, you've been waiting for your questions.
Not my questions. All of your loyal listeners and Barflies in the chat room have been having debates of their own while you and Emery have been talking, and they want to talk about a couple of other players that haven't been mentioned tonight. So Bobby Phelan's in the house, and he wants to know what Emery thinks of the style of running that Cohen has been showing lately. Do you think he's trying to do too much, or are you okay with it?
I'm glad he asked that question, because here's a problem I see when you have backs like Cohen, and people overthink simplistic things. People look at Cohen and they say, okay, shifty, speed, let's run him outside. You hear draft analysts and bloggers and pundits, get him out in space, get him out in space. I learned this early on in physics. The fastest way to get from point A to point B is straight ahead. And when you have someone that has the speed like Cohen, you want him running downhill. You want slower guys like Howard to go outside because they'll do a better job of setting up their blocks. Juxtaposed to guys on the opposite end, the faster defensive backs will try to beat Howard to the spot and therefore set up the cutback lanes for guys like Jordan Howard. You see it all the time. For guys like Cohen, I guarantee a lot of his big runs, if you're going to watch the tape, are when they come in between the tackle box, because when you're a linebacker, you're, first of all, you got to find him. Second, you're standing flat-footed, and by the time you realize where he is, he's up on your toes. He makes a move left or right. You're stuck in the mud, and he's off to the races. Plus, past performance dictates future success. We saw him do this at North Carolina A&T, running downhill in a traditional gap scheme with the Aggies. They fed him the football 25, 30 times a game. No injuries, never missed a game. If the Bears want to be successful running the football, run Tarik Cohen downhill, because what you're going to see and what you're seeing now is predictability by personnel. You saw it with Jay Spiller in Buffalo. You saw it with Reggie Bush in New Orleans. Oh, here comes Reggie Bush. Here comes the screen. You know, here comes here comes CJ Spiller. Here comes the quick bubble screen or the tall sweep. When Reggie Bush got to Miami and they allowed him to be a traditional tailback and lining him up in the eye and running, you know, inside zone, gap scheme and things like that, he had his first 1,000-yard season. When you have a back like Cohen, the Bears could easily have two 1,000-yard rushers. The problem is they look at Cohen like a gadget guy. When he's been a ball, you know, he's bell cow back. And doesn't get hurt, because when you're that short and that compact, it's hard to get a good lick on you. And injuries anyway are freak occurrences. So every time you see Cohen run to the outside, here's the other part too that defies logic and physics. If all the speed is on the outside and they have angles already, why would I run to the angles? They have speed already. My best angle as the ball carrier is running right at you, because as the ball carrier, I control the angles. So if I'm running straight ahead, you can't figure out where I'm going to go. I know where I'm going to go. So therefore, I'm beating you already. But if I'm running to the sideline and you already have the angle there and the speed, you take away my speed by running me to the outside. My speed is best served running downhill. Now, you want to throw a crack toss to Jordan Howard? That's perfect, because those guys can try to fly out there, beat him to the corner, and just set up all kind of cutback lanes where he can find it and work his way back down the middle of the field, which he does well.
And to your point, they do, to Emery's point, it is becoming very evident to me, logging the plays, that they're using him in gadgety type of plays. They did run an inside, you know, a read option play where he gave it to him against Green Bay, allowing him to hit it up in there, and he almost broke it. I put up a play against Detroit last season where they gave him an inside zone. He comes in, freaking absolutely punishes the safety there, Quinn, and runs him over. So to say that he can't do it is something in self-scouting and personnel. It was a great question by Bobby and a great answer by you. I agree with it. You can't be predictable with your talent, especially guys that are game breakers like that. And
it makes me so mad, because you see it on Twitter a lot. Every like draft blogger or whatever you want to call him, well, no, he doesn't have the size running side. Oh, he doesn't, you know, he's going to get hurt. He can't take, like, forget the fact that I played the damn position. I'm telling you, it doesn't matter. Like, oh, nah, you're wrong, because, you know, I'm looking at these numbers. How often have you seen, like, Warwick Dunn has over 10,000 yards in his career and is 5'9", 178. Emmitt Smith, 205. Barry Sanders, 200 pounds. Like, we keep going on. If size was a indicator of longevity, then Brandon Jacobs would be the best running back in NFL.
That's a very good point.
All right, gentlemen. The next question comes to us from Sandy Tom, who's across the pond. He wants to talk about Jordan Howard. He says Nagy seems to be very, very pass happy with Howard not being utilized to the full. Is he being too cute, ignoring his quality control coaches, being to arena, or all of the above.
Like, I think we just talked about that when we talked about Nagy being a quarterback. I mean, you know, I get it. You're a quarterback. You want to throw the ball all over the yard. You play in the arena league. Yeah, he's about to get these pass attempts up. So, yes, he is ignoring the talent on the team. Because, to be honest, there's good talent at receiver. You know, so if you want to throw it 60 times a game, you got players in Gabriel, Robinson, Miller, Javon Williams when he gets back healthy. You got tight ends in Burton. Yes, you can throw the ball 60 times a game because you got the personnel. But you don't have the quarterback that makes that justifiable. But you do have the backs to make it justifiable to run the ball 35 times, throwing it 22 times. So I think right now they're just misusing their personnel because it's there in place for them to be successful.
Totally agree with everything you said, except Javon Wims is healthy. He's just a healthy scratch, and my throat is about to scratch. Excuse me. With Kevin White, I think that's a sign for Kevin White. Like, how is Kevin White on that football field?
I don't understand the NFL sometimes. Sometimes I hate football. So
Kevin makes you. No, I want to say this for the record on my show, Bears Hour Live, Bears Barroom Radio Network. We got Emery Hunt, the czar of the playbook, friend, great source of knowledge of football, this great game. So I hate politics. I don't debate it. I see ignorance. I see everybody's right. You get nowhere with it. But when it comes into my game of football, and you have a kid like Wims, who I feel like not only will help this quarterback because of his huge catch radius, but it'll also, you talked about Khalil Mack having that dog, that spirit. When I watch Javon Wims, I see a dog at receiver. Not the fact that he went to Georgia. I see a guy that wants the football. Am I speaking the same language as you?
Yeah, you see a guy that wants it. You know what I'm saying? And Kevin White was that guy prior to the injuries. But when you have guys like that, that can instantly help out your team that's balling, I'm pretty sure Wims is probably standing on the side like, yo, what the hell, man? You know, I could be out here helping. It's tough, you know, because the NFL rules only allow you to suit up certain guys. And, you know, I hate that rule as well. So, yeah, I get it. And I like Kevin White. You know, it's just unfortunate that with all the injuries he's had, I think that has robbed him of that specialness as far as explosiveness is concerned. So, you know, that's what made him Kevin White. So, I mean, I understand that you wanted to get him out there and get him in the groove to play because he's healthy, but you also have to find a way to get Williams out there as well.
All right, gentlemen, the other player that was the topic of debate in the chat room was Mr. Kyle Fuller. So Stacy's in the house, and she wants to talk about his last two game-changing missed opportunities, one in each game. And what do you guys want to talk about and say about that?
Well, look, I'll start in saying, listen, I expressed against Green Bay, he got pushed off against Allison. It was clear as day. It wasn't called. If that was a Bears receiver, I know a flag would have came out. It's just historically like that. Winning will change that kind of bias that we see in regards to that. And the recovery that he made against Allison on a dime ball by Rodgers. I mean, you couldn't put that ball any better. And he still got his arm in there and tried to get it away. That one, I just waved that play. The drop is inexcusable. He had to catch the football. He's got to unfortunately live with that for the rest of his life. That could have changed the whole game in a game that had so many plays that could have changed the whole. The Bears were like that guy that has his one letter from bingo and misses every goddamn time. He just never got. You just dropped every possible opportunity to lose that game. You came up with the answer. You just did it. and the drop was terrible. But this game, looking at the play over and over, I'm going to go on the record. This guy was covering him. I think he needed to turn his head. It's a hard, difficult play. I wish he was able to. I don't think that would have caused separation like some people tweeted at me. But I think the coverage was extremely good. So therefore, again, Russell Wilson put a dime ball on an NFL football field that you just can't, you know, recreate. Those guys have a special quality. It's what we hope Mitch will have. So I'm fine with Fuller. I don't think that you could do anything about it, Emery.
Yeah, I like Fuller. And again, sometimes great plays are nullified by greater plays. So like you said, he was in perfect coverage. Ideally, I would want him to turn around and find the football. Having played a little cornerback before, I know people tend to think that, okay, you know, if I turn around, I'm going to lose track. You're not, once the ball is in the air, the receiver is irrelevant. You're tracking
exactly
and finding the football. So if you got speed, if you got agility, if you got ball skills, like you're not worried about losing the receiver. If the ball going to take you to the receiver anyway. So in that situation, if he turns and finds the football, he literally swallows the football because the ball is like right on top of his head. But just a great job by one, Russell Wilson, two, the receiver, Lockett, to make the reception. So I just think Fuller, and you really can't corner. They do a great job versus the run, be solid versus the run, be solid versus the run, be aggressive without getting penalties. So Fuller is fine in my eyes. It's just nitpicking on a play that obviously was a touchdown, but you know, I think Fuller's a really good corner.
Those are all the questions our barflies have for both of you. They are just following Emery left, right, and center, so expect a couple more notifications coming from our barflies.
I want to just point out, Emery, the offensive line play. You know, that has been a big topic of discussion. You know, certain people wanted us to take a Hall of Fame guard in the first round. You look at the Bears offensive line, I just thought Cody Whitehair and Kyle Long, as well as Bobby Massey and Leno, really played well. I think clearly Kush is the weak link here, missing assignments and what have you. When you look at this football team, you know, in your assessment, how far away do you think Daniels is from coming in? Should he be in there? And what do you think of the offensive line play?
I think the offensive line has been critically underrated. When, you know, obviously a starter at tailback, but when you go and watch Jordan Howard run, and you like, man, that's a goddamn lane. Like, that's a lane, that's a hole, that's a, you know, you don't hear crevice. It's lane, hole, abyss. It's everything. The offensive line does a great job. And, you know, they draft Daniels, I guess, who's on a practice squad. Allen, who's on a practice squad, a guy they just recently let go, I really like, Morgan. So if there's one area of scouting the Bears consistently nail, to me, it's been the offensive line. So I think the line is fine. I don't think they, you know, I don't think they have to worry about that at all.
Phil, Emery, we usually have a final thought before I bring in final barfly comments and wrap up the show. Emery, what's your final thought?
I had the Bears finishing second in the NFC North in the preseason. You can check that video on youtube.com/footballgameplan. Holding steady right now because I still believe the Bears are talented. And I think if you're a Bears fan, you really have to be excited about where this team is going. And I'm not just saying that because I'm on a Bears podcast and because I like all the people that are producing and hosting this podcast, but seriously, a few minor tweaks here and there, and this Bears team is going to be something to be reckoned with. But they got the pieces, especially on defense. The offense has pieces. It's just up to 10 to get his act together. If he does that, then this Bears team can go far.
I'm looking at my final thought on this. As a young head coach, as I said in my rant, I really hope and I pray that he self-scouts not only his personnel decisions, but his play calling in situational football. Because I think, to Emery's point, and I truly believe this, this Bears team has an opportunity to do something they haven't done. And this isn't hype. This is me watching two games where the first game they should have won. They really should have. And the second game, they should have blown that team off out of the water. And they're not using this running game to their advantage to help this young quarterback get to where he needs to go. I think this week against an Arizona team that has talent, that you could say whatever you want. I don't know who they're going to start, if it's going to be Sam Bradford, if it's going to be the rookie Rosen, or God, I hope Mike Glennon in milliseconds late will be turned into points for the Bears defense, because you have to come out there and set the tone every week with your team, and you can't be experimenting with your quarterback. You have to do it now and get this running game going, and also challenge your defensive players like Kwiatkowski, Leonard Floyd, and make them better. Make them play better. If that means Leonard Floyd sitting the bench just like you did with this fullback, we have no idea why he's on the roster, then that's the message you need to send this week. So that's really my, I think 100% Aaron Lynch should be starting this football game. I felt like last week, for the record, Roy Robinson Harris should be starting, and I saw Jonathan Bullard play his best NFL game as a professional this past week against the Seahawks. And that really is what being a good coach and using your personnel and getting the most out of them means. So that's my challenge this week. That's my thought as we move forward into another week. I want to thank Emery Hunt for coming on and staying late with us tonight with the Barflies and giving us a truthful and champion-esque breakdown of the Chicago Bears. I live for this. I was looking forward to you coming on, Emery. You know how I feel about you. I'm a guy that wears his heart on his sleeve, like the song Stand By Me. I have much love for this guy. I love him. And I love BG. So, BG, thank you, Emery, for coming on. And BG, what do you got?
I got the Barflies loving Emery as much, if not more, than you do, Phil. Let's remind our Barflies and all our new listeners that we've got a slightly different schedule this week. Live on Wednesday night, right back here on MixLR.com, it's Buffon 55, the fastest moving 30-minute sports podcast on the internet. And scheduled to join me and John is our beloved Paige DeMacos. The next episode of Bears 100 Proof will hit your podcast stream and the website on Friday morning this week. And scheduled to join us on that show is the one and only Patrick Finley, who covers the Bears over at the Chicago Sun-Times. And listeners can also expect a new fantasy football goon coming out this week. And of course, we're back here on MixLR.com on Friday morning for the Mike North Advantage. We are stocked full of amazing guests this week and will be for the rest of the season. We couldn't do it without our Barflies. And this is what some of them had to say in the chat room tonight. Happy birthday to Ryan. He has been drinking all day in celebration of win and his birthday.
A victory Tuesday, Ryan.
Steven Zim Zimmerman says, ESPN doesn't give a bleep about the Bears, never have and never will. That anti-Chicago bias is real.
Yeah.
Hair Bear is saying, poor Mitch is trying to process a quad-core offense with a Windows 98 and a half stick of RAM.
getting all tech on us now. Emery is breaking it down with tech analogies.
We got all kinds of analogies in the house, including B. Diddy, Brian Quinn, letting us know that The Hobbit, formerly known as No Gains, Low Gains, is actually 2-0 right now.
That is true. Gase calling plays.
And for our producer behind the board, just a reminder from Steven Zimmerman again, that based on what we've seen, Trubisky has nowhere to go but up, and Mahomes has nowhere to go but down.
Oh, I'm sure Aldo will have a lot to say about that on 100 Proof. And I also want to say sure. I love Aldo, too. How could I leave him out? The super producer.
He's always there. Always there. That wraps up this edition of Bears Hour Live. In a bit, we will see you all back here next Monday. Have a good one.
I like that. Bears Hour Live and a bit.
Yeah, I think we're just going to change it.